ready for another one?
I think so.
We're just trucking along, moving through the year. It is now July 9th, 2018, and we are in episode 91. Seems just yesterday we were doing 69.
I know.
And now we're in episode 91. And the title for this one, I don't know if I'm going to put it on the blog, but just as you're listening, this is another Seinfeld episode. It's just another show about nothing.
We're just going to talk about topics and things that come to mind.
We've had so much stuff going on recently, and stuff going on in the media, stuff going on in our personal lives, that to do a new and old business, to fill it all up would be a whole episode. And back in the day, I'm looking back here, episode, where was it? We did a ghost story one where we didn't even talk about ghost stories. But we talked about ghost stories at the beginning, so we sort of had to. So we like did the last 5 minutes about ghost stories. But anyway, here we are. How you been?
Not too bad. I want to give a quick shout out to my homeboy, Tom Martino, with DWM Productions. We got his movie Fisted playing in the background right now. Check out Tom's podcast, DWN Productions, the horror crap podcast on the Horrorphilia Network. I've been listening to it lately, and Tom just cracks me up, dude. It's him and his buddy Joe from FastCustomShirts.com, and they just talk about a little bit of everything. You can go to his website, DWNProductions.com. You can check out all the cool custom latex masks and props and busts and all kind of things that Tom makes himself. He actually went to Tom Savini's school for special effects design.
Sweet.
So, check him out. You can go to DWNProductions.com and get your own copy of Fisted. You can get Fisted for $10 over there on the website. So definitely check him out. Just all kinds of crap that you may or may not enjoy. Just want to do that real quick. Like I said, I've been listening to his podcast lately, and it's been cracking me up, dude. Tom and Joe are an interesting team.
Sweet, sweet. I want to give a shout out to Lance over at the Horror Returns podcast. Listen to a couple episodes of theirs. They invited us on. They invited us on for like next Saturday, which is going to be, for this coming Saturday, which is going to be damn near impossible because I'm not going to be able to see Jurassic World between now and then do the whole Skype thing and coordinate it with you. And
right.
I was trying to. I was walking around Seattle, like, texting back and forth and talking to my wife, and I'm like, dude, I just don't think I can do this. Like, I'd love to. He's like, all right, we'll look at the schedule and, you know, move you sometime in the future. But okay. He cracks me up because he'll instant message me like a response to something I talked about in a previous episode. Like when we were drinking on the road trip episode, and and I couldn't remember the name of Clubber Lang.
Yeah.
And so I'm just sitting there at work one day, and I'm just like bebopping, doing whatever it is I do, and my phone beeps, and I look down, and it's like in all caps, it's like, Clubber Lang, man. <I'm> like, <"Dude." laughs> So that's pretty awesome. So those guys are cool. We're going to be on their show, hopefully, and then maybe we can get one or two of them on ours.
Yeah.
But check out the Horror Returns. So, good show.
All are welcome on our show.
Yeah.
Anybody wants to be on it, just give us a shout.
Absolutely. We're always ready. We love talking to folks. All right. Let's get into some dun-dun-dun.
First, the old business.
On this date in 1401... Conqueror Tamerlane destroys Baghdad and kills 20,000 people. 20,000 people is a serious feat whenever you don't have guns or bombs.
It's a significant death count, for sure.
This date, 1776, George Washington orders the Declaration of Independence to be read aloud to the Continental Army in Manhattan, while thousands of British troops on Staten Island prepare for the Battle of Long Island. Now, in your head, you've got some patriotic music playing, and that's being called out. But
snare drum in the background.
The British won that battle. They were forced to evacuate New York, and they sustained pretty heavy casualties. So the British won that one. But okay. And on this date in 1918 in Nashville, an inbound and outbound train collide, killing 101 people and injuring 171 people. And it is, to date, the worst rail disaster in history.
Rail disasters are always, whenever they have one, they seem to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I still want to take a train trip so bad. I think that would just be cool to take a train trip somewhere.
For sure, dude. I mean, I don't know how I could stay awake with just the constant tutun. You know, I'd just be like, ah. Sing me to sleep. All right, notable births on this date, 1938. Brian Dennehy from First Blood.
And many, many other things.
Oh, lots of other things, but he's the asshole sheriff. Just let him walk through town. Let him get a burger and let him leave. But instead, you had to wake up Rambo.
Did you see the video that kind of went viral? These guys threw their buddy a Rambo First Blood bachelor party. Mm-mm. He didn't know they were doing it. They set it up. They pretended to be the sheriff. They arrested him. They had a makeshift jail that he escaped from. he jumps on a motorcycle and they're filming it and he takes off. And it's just, they totally reenact the entire Rambo movie. It's pretty cool. His friends went above and beyond for his bachelor party for sure.
This date in 1942, Shaft was born. Mr. Richard Roundtree.
Nice.
1945, suspense writer Dean Koontz. Have you ever seen the movie Hideaway?
No, I don't think so.
It's got Jeff Goldblum and Alicia Silverstone.
Nope.
It was a good, scary movie. This date in 1946, Bon Scott of AC/DC, that original singer, mm-hmm. was born. And this date in 1947, O.J. Simpson.
Renthal James.
Getting back into horror, on this date in 1952, Mr. John Tesh. (laughs) 1956, Tom Hanks. Happy birthday.
It's an icon right there, man.
1964, true horror, Courtney Love. And in 1976, Fred Savage.
Fred Savage, he dropped off the face of the earth, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he became a producer.
Okay.
So he does a lot of stuff behind the camera.
Okay.
He still looks like Kevin.
He does.
he's my age. He's a year younger than me.
So he still looks like
he still looks like a 13-year-old. And luckily there were no notable deaths. Nobody I would recognize anyway. So that does it for old business.
All right. That was short and sweet.
Yep. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Weeble's haunted house, Weeble's wobble all about, and it's a real exciting place to be. A smiling ghost with glowing face has a secret hiding place, and that's not all, there's plenty more to see. Cause a Weeble's haunted house is a great place to be. Weeble's haunted house, including glow-in-the-dark Weeble ghost, new from Romper Room.
Ready? Go!
Peanut butter. Chocolate.
Here it comes! You missed! Faster! Get away! Uh-oh! Oh, ow! Your peanut butter hit my chocolate! Your chocolate hit my peanut butter!
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Real milk chocolate, delicious peanut butter. Two great tastes that taste great together.
Reese? Yeah.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Alrighty, you ready to get into a...
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Okay, Davy, Florida. this isn't one of those. It's more serious. Woman went missing, 47-year-old Shizuka Matsuki. She was walking her dogs. Her and one of her dogs went missing. One of the dogs was found. A short time later, they caught a 12-foot, 6-inch alligator in a local pond near where she lived, and found what they believe is her arm in the alligator's stomach.
Ooh.
They still haven't found the body, but they assume that the gator took care of her and her 13-year-old poodle. Alligators are no joke. Mm. No, I've seen some crazy stuff, too. Growing up in Louisiana, remember the McElhenney's on the Tabasco Sauce Company, and it's on a little island in my hometown. And we used to go there to go crabbing and stuff like that. And I remember one time, there's a little pond near the souvenir shack, and there's alligators in it. And I see this woman wanted to take a picture of an alligator close up. So she had the camera in one hand, up to her face, had her left arm extended out with her husband lowering down towards the alligator so she could get as close as possible to it. And I remember thinking, she must trust him a lot. Because yeah. If she's nagging, he might drop her in there with that alligator. You never know.
Well, there was that guy that got killed. I think it was actually in Texas. It wasn't Florida. But there's signs to say no swimming, alligators. And his final words were, fuck alligators. He jumped in and alligators got him. Dumbass.
Okay. On the same vein, there's a village that I read about recently in Burkina Faso. The village is called Bazuli, all right, down in Africa. In the village, they share a pond with 100 crocodiles in it. And they consider these crocodiles sacred. And they actually, they feed the crocodiles, they swim with the crocodiles, they lay on the crocodiles' backs. They are living as one with these crocodiles. And the way the legend goes, the relationship with the predators started back in the 15th century. The village was in the grip of a drought until the crocodiles led women to a hidden pond where the population could quench their thirst and get water to be able to survive. The villagers organized a party to celebrate and thank the reptiles. A celebration is known as Kum Lakri and is still held every year, during which villagers make sacrifices and ask the animals to grant their wishes of health, prosperity, and a good harvest. So since the 15th century, this village has been living in harmony with these crocodiles. They don't have crocodile attacks. The kids actually grow up swimming in the pond with the crocodiles. And these aren't small crocodiles. These are those big-ass crocodiles you see that are, you know, 20 foot long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And apparently it's become like a huge tourism spot where people go. They have about 5,000 visitors a year. They go down there to just see them
swimming,
hanging
with
out
the
with the crocodiles. Yeah. Pretty crazy.
Well, I guess it's the same thing as whenever you have the sharks in the aquarium. You wonder why the sharks don't eat the fish that are in the aquarium, which, you know, occasionally they do, but for the most part, they keep them fed real well.
Right.
So that's why they don't eat the other fish.
Okay, what do H.P. Lovecraft and Albert Einstein have in common?
They're both dead?
See, apparently, they were both huge racist xenophobes.
Of course.
And Albert Einstein's travel diaries have recently been interpreted and written out by a couple of researchers, where he apparently despised Chinese people. He was on a trip in China between October 1922 and March 1923. He describes the Chinese as industrious, filthy, obtuse people. Chinese don't sit on benches while eating, but squat like Europeans do when they relieve themselves out in the woods. He describes the children as being spiritless and quite obtuse. Talks about the abundance of offspring the Chinese has and says it would be a pity if these Chinese supplant other races. For the likes of us, the mere thought is unspeakably dreary. The dude was kind of a dick. So yeah, this is a kind of in contrast to the image that most people have of Albert Einstein himself. He once said that racism was a horrible thing for people to partake in. And
he also created the atom bomb.
Yeah.
So there's that. Everybody is racist at some point.
Yeah.
It's... And there was an article today, or yesterday, today, that I read that was talking about how, basically, the article is about how, like, when people go and do yoga, so you're supposed to go and do yoga and meditation, and what it's supposed to do, like, what the whole point of it is, so you're supposed to do these things, and it's supposed to disconnect you from the world, and other people, and possessions, and all of these things. But what it actually does is the opposite. It's like it says, whenever they take people and they give them interviews and stuff, people who have just done yoga, they'll ask them questions and they'll self-identify as better than their, you know, other people, or more enlightened than other people, or more awake than mm-hmm. other people. And what it is you get a superiority complex because you're doing something that is bringing yourself above the rabble, so to speak.
Yeah.
And there's a paradox there, because the reality is, yeah, you want to bring yourself above the rabble, but what you want to do is, it needs to be altruistic. You're not supposed to care. You're supposed to be doing it for its own sake. You're not supposed to be doing it so it'll make you feel superior. It's the same thing with racism. It's there's old school, what you'd call, like, you know, redneck old school racism, or just, you know, past days racism, where people didn't know each other. They just kind of knew what they thought, but they didn't really have, let's say, they didn't really have evil in mind. You know, it's like, I don't know, like, the Japanese attacked and slaughtered the Chinese, and we sent GIs over there to fight the Japanese, to defend the Chinese against the Japanese. And all of those GIs probably hated both of them. But, you know, not personally, mm-hmm. not individually, but just, they were racist, you know. But they were over there dying for them. And then you've got that insidious kind of racism that's like, what I like to think of, like, white yuppies use to, like, make people feel bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like hipster racism, where it's like, everything you do is racist. Everything you think, everything you do.
If you don't think this way,
if you don't think this way, you're racist. And, like, that's worse. You know, that's way worse. And that's where we're at. So I don't know. Like, but yeah, Albert Einstein, he's a man of his time.
Yeah, a man of his time. That's just it.
You know,
that's a big part of it.
He was a German Jew in the 1940s.
Yeah,
he's not gonna be all sweetness and light to everybody.
Okay. Question for you. If you could taste human flesh in an ethical way, would you? If you had the opportunity to where it wasn't anything illegal.
Maybe.
Okay. The question was recently put to test on Reddit by a user by the name of Incredibly Shiny Shark. Okay. He hasn't released his name, although he has given out some pictures, but apparently, several years ago, he was in a motorcycle crash. Car hit his motorcycle, sent him careening. His foot was crushed, shattered. Doctor said that they're going to have to amputate, and he asked the doctor, can I keep the foot? And the doctor said, well, yeah. So on July 10th, 2016, 3 weeks after the accident, he invited 10 of his friends to a special brunch. He didn't lie to them. He had told them what was going on. They ate apple strudel, puff pastries, fruit tarts, chocolate cake. And then the main course was fajita tacos made from the meat from his foot. He recently did an interview also for Vice, where he talks about everything that happened. There's no law banning cannibalism. There's no federal law. There are some state laws. The state he was in, it was not against the law for you to ingest human flesh, but he was able to do it. He comes home with the foot, cuts off a chunk real quick. They cut it above the ankle, so he cut off a chunk of meat. He was going to get it freeze-dried and get a taxidermist to take care of it, but he couldn't find a taxidermist that would do it. So he just went ahead. He had the rest of it cremated. After he cut this chunk of meat, he had the rest of it cremated. And then he waited a little bit, a couple weeks, and decided to invite his friends over and cook it. He actually had a friend of his that was a chef come over to actually prepare the fajita tacos for him. And he has pictures of the meat, the cooking process, the tacos they made, everything for you to check out. And like I said, you can find this on vice.com, where you can learn a little bit more about it.
Now that you've told the story, I think my answer has changed to no.
And one of his friends took a bite and spit it out. The rest of the friends, they all took their tacos down and ate them.
Yeah, I think I want to change my answer. That just sounds gross.
Yeah. All right, let's get into some movie news. You may have heard that Ewan McGregor has signed on to portray the adult Danny Torrance in the big screen adaptation of Dr. Sleep, the sequel to The Shining, which Audrey, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Dr. Sleep picks up with Torrance years after the events of The Shining. Character is now a rage-filled alcoholic whose shining powers return when he begins to embrace sobriety. Torrance starts using his gift to communicate with the dying at a local hospice center, and his story takes a turn after he meets a young girl who also has shining powers, being able to communicate with the dead. So I'm curious. Ewan McGregor is a good choice for it. I think it'll be a pretty good movie, so I am looking forward to that. Have you seen the trailer for Dumbo?
Yes.
What do you think?
I think it looks cute.
It looks cute, but Dumbo's supposed to talk and stuff like that. I'm going to give it a chance. I think it looks like it's going to be a cool movie, but it's going to be a lot different than what...
Dumbo didn't talk.
I thought Dumbo talked.
Only one that talked were the blackbirds.
The crows talked. The mouse didn't talk.
The mouse talked. The crows talked. The other elephants, but Dumbo never did.
Okay. I haven't seen it in a very long time.
Seen it quite recently.
Okay.
Several times.
But Danny DeVito is going to be in it. It's going to be a pretty good cast, so yeah. I think it'll be a neat little movie for sure. The special effects look amazing.
Yeah, it looks cool. I thought it looked cute. Just the teaser trailer.
Yeah.
Have you seen Solo yet?
No.
Meh.
That's what I hear. Because I'm kind of waiting for it to come out on DVD.
It was good, and it was better than all the three prequels. And it was action-packed and everything, but the next day I didn't wake up thinking, like, you know how, like, when you see a good movie and, like, certain things stick in your head, and even things that aren't quite right, that you just, it wasn't spectacular. It was just, it was all right. And it didn't even have Woody Harrelson in it. And one of the things, like, a lot of, like, my wife's main criticism was that he didn't properly channel Harrison Ford. I was like, well, actually, he did a pretty good job. He had the same inflections in his voice, the same kind of. It wasn't even really that. It was more just. I don't know. It just wasn't. It wasn't great. It was just all right.
Okay. Well
it was just like one of those things that you kind of like, okay, changing things for its own sake. Like, I'm sure you've seen the previews where the Millennium Falcon has the gap between its horns filled. That's an escape pod, right? Fair enough, it's an escape pod. Why would you never replace your escape pod?
Right.
And not only that, but in A New Hope, in Star Wars, when the guy brings the report back to Vader, he says, Captain's log said they abandoned ship shortly after takeoff and several of the escape pods are missing. It's like, so it's equipped with escape pods that are big, that are different from that one in front. I don't know, it was all right. It was not great.
Okay. It's one of those I'm gonna watch it eventually, but I'll wait till it comes on a streaming service or DVD or something like that. All right. So, I take it you've seen the Halloween trailer.
I have.
The trailer for H2O.
It's H4O now, right?
Okay. So, what do you think?
I liked the throwback. I like the attention to detail. So, he's got that knitting needle hole in his mask from when she stabbed him. I do like that. I liked the callback to Halloween 3 with the kids in the silver shamrock masks. It does look frightening.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for it. I think it looks cool.
I'm excited for it, but it's not what I expected. if that makes any sense. You know, it, like I said, it's like a remake of H2O as opposed to a sequel to Part 1.
Right.
Which is what it's supposed to be. And like I told you before, the one of the big criticisms or the big things that they kept talking leading up to this movie was that Rob Zombie had done a horrible job. They're trying to get away from what Rob Zombie did, but it reminded me very much of a Rob Zombie movie. The whole prison yard scene looked like something out of one of Rob Zombie's movies. The part where throwing the teeth over the bathroom stall, I thought was kind of gimmicky, and it just didn't make sense to me. As far as to me, I didn't see Michael Myers taking the time to pull somebody's teeth out, you know, meticulously, because the roots are still on there and everything. Mm-hmm. He didn't just knock them out; he actually pulled them out.
Yeah,
and then walked around with them in his hand to drop them over a bathroom stall. That just, like I said, it wasn't what I expected. I'm still looking forward to it. It looks like it's going to be a good movie, but it's not.
See, and this is just my analytical brain. There's the distinct possibility that earlier in the film, maybe he gets one of his teeth knocked out.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, yeah? Let me salt your food here, you know? I don't know. A couple of things that I saw that it's... She's been waiting for 40 years for him to get out of prison so she could kill him. And she's, you know, practicing shooting.
Mm-hmm.
But she's got an Old West lever action gun.
Winchester.
And I'm like, okay, I realize Hollywood is very much anti-AR-15, but if you have a stone cold killer coming after your ass and you're arming up, that's what you're going to go for.
Right.
You know, even in, well, they're in Illinois. So, yeah, even in Illinois, where those things are illegal, you'd have it, you know, modified to the legal Illinois with the 10-round magazines, right, and just have several of them.
Right.
You wouldn't be depending on a lever action to kill the behemoth. But he wouldn't try that shit down here.
So, yeah, like I said, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a good movie, but it just wasn't what I expected from the way they were talking about it. I was...
I don't know.
Because 40 years later, you're not a direct sequel to Part 1. You've just totally forgotten about the rest of the Halloween universe.
You wiped them all.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, honestly, I really don't kind of care if it, as long as it's scary.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things that a lot of them lost was... the scariness.
Yep.
Like, the first one is still the most frightening of them all. And the second one is pretty close. And then after that, not so much.
It's not being scary.
You know, there's some good kills, but it's not suspenseful. It's just, you expect him to kill people, and he does, and then it's over. You know? Like, not real... Anyway...
But the official synopsis they released, a British documentary crew comes to the United States to visit Michael in prison for a retrospective of the Maniac's Night of Terror. Their project becomes way more interesting when Myers escapes custody, retrieves a signature mask, and seeks revenge on Laurie, with others naturally being part of his impressive career body count along the way. In the decades following the fateful Halloween night that forever altered the former babysitter's life, Laurie has armed and prepped herself for Michael's inevitable return, to the detriment of her family, including daughter Karen and granddaughter Allison. So.
Well, they got a lot to live up to.
Oh, yeah.
It was funny because I was watching Friday Part 2 earlier today, and it's kind of strange, it's kind of funny how much effort they put into trying to recreate these old scenes, not necessarily scenes, but these old, the lore from these old movies.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you actually look at, because they're pretty low budget, especially the first couple of them, like Part 2, for the most part, he kills everybody outside,
mm-hmm,
you know, and there's a ramshackle shack, and there's a house and a couple of rooms.
That's one of the things that makes it so awesome, is just the simpleness of the movies themselves.
But the thing that makes it scary, the thing that gets you with the Friday the 13th, is the suspense. You know he's there.
You recognize that guy on the screen real quick? Yo, Joe Grisafi.
But you know he's there, and you know he's killing people, and even the movie announces him. It's like, when she looks out the window and there's no Jason there, it's quiet. When he looks in the window, it's all cha-cha-cha. So you know he's coming to kill somebody. Yeah. Somebody's about to get it. But it's still, whenever he jumps out, you still kind of jump. And you're like, oh, crap. Gotcha. Right. You know? So they spend a lot of money trying to recreate that stuff that they just did with quick...
Simple camera effects.
Yeah.
Camera effects, lighting, sound. Sound is so important in movies, man. As I've gotten older, I've come to realize just how important the background noise is to a movie.
You know, that's one thing, watching or listening to Hail Ming, they were talking about Army of Darkness. And I want to go back and rewatch it. In fact, I want to borrow it from you because I haven't seen it in a long time. But Mark pointed out one of the great things about that movie is the sound editing, is that you could almost listen to it as an audio drama and you'd still know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like everybody has a distinct voice, and all the sound effects and the banging and the door slams and stuff laughing. And when I was watching Evil Dead or Evil Dead 2, it's like that. It's very much like, it's so loud and so chaotic. And then whenever it's quiet, it's almost unnerving.
Yeah.
Because you know, and like that backward smoke, you know that smoke's just going around the back to start over again. Uh-huh. But you don't have to really even be watching to know exactly what's going on. And you're right, the sound editing is
so important to the film. It does so much for it, especially horror. It just does so much for it, man. It's just something so simple. I have so much respect for the Academy Award for sound.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can see how important it is to a movie now.
Well, you want to take a break and come back?
Yeah, we can do that.
All right, we'll be right back.
Move over, bacon. There's something leaner. Tasty sizzling.
Whoa, sis, what's the matter with my bacon?
Here's what's the matter. F-A-T, fat. Sizzling's 50% leaner than bacon. It's all real meat without all the fat.
Mmm, delicious.
Move over, bacon. There's something leaner.
So why sizzle fat? Sizzle lean.
From Swift. And look for Sizzling now. It's a better value than ever. But hurry, it's flying out of the store.
We're about halfway through the show. We haven't really talked about much.
We're not supposed to.
Yeah, it's a show about nothing. So what else has been going on, man?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of something. Kids are gearing up for another anime con. Get ready for Fandemic. Just work. I haven't really been going anywhere. I haven't been doing much of anything, man. What movies are coming out that you want to check out soon?
I'm going to go... By the time this comes out, I will have already seen it. I want to see Incredibles 2. Mm-hmm. My daughter's already seen it twice.
I might try to go see it this weekend.
So that's a good thing. There isn't much in the horror world coming out that I've... You know, there's been a couple of things. I forgot to mention it on our July 2nd episode last week, but on the 1st, my new book came out.
Okay.
So it's on Amazon. Go to Amazon and look up. It's called The Trees Have Eyes, and it's an anthology. It's all about stories in the woods, campfire stories and stuff like that. And the editors wanted to just really make a deluxe volume, so it's a heavy book. It's like 20 stories, and I haven't read all of them in the book yet. But the two stories that I have in there are 30 pages apiece, so you can imagine if there's 20 something, there's a significant number of pages in this
right.
book. But now just been working, been trying to write. I'm really trying to now boost the Halloween show, because now we're kind of just we're chugging now into fall.
Right.
You know, we're that summertime, like 4th of July. That's usually the day where the light changes and starts coasting you into fall. We're not to the hottest point of the summer yet, but you know, if we can get through August, you know, Halloween show's in September.
Yeah, I'm about to. Got in touch with Randy today. We're going to try to meet next month so we can tie down all the panels and everything, see exactly how we're going to structure it. And I already got a few that I plan on doing. He has some ideas too, so we'll get all that squared away.
Good.
The show's going to be great, man. People getting excited, and I was pretty happy to see that they opened up some lanes past Pinemont. So hopefully the section coming up to the actual Crown Plaza Brook Hollow will be opened up by the time the show kicks in. So
yeah, I think it'll be a good day. Well, yeah. At least people won't be able to leave if the traffic's still bad. So they'll have to hang out and shop a little bit more. But yeah, you know, did my vacation in Seattle. There's a couple of things, hadn't talked about on the show. Like I said, we toured around. We just played straight up tourist. We did the Space Needle. We did the Chihuly Museum, which I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's a blown glass. This guy does blown glass sculptures.
I think I have heard of them.
They're huge, and they're really really neat. And so we walked through there. We saw the Seattle Underground, which I was telling you about before the show. I don't know if you've ever heard about that or seen that.
Mm-hmm.
But
that'd be awesome to see. That it just sounds like catacombs, maybe.
It is. It's neat. So for those of you who've never heard of the Seattle Underground, so basically what happened was in the late 1800s, everything in Seattle was a logging town. And what they would do is the main drag in the financial district, it was like a 45 degree grade from the top of the hill down to the sawmill. So they would roll the lumber down and they would slide it down this 45 degree, basically mud slick, to the sawmill. Well, in the 1800s, a building caught fire and it spread and it burnt down most of what was then downtown Seattle. And since everything was smoldering, the city said that they were going to regrade the streets. They were going to raise up and regrade the streets for easier transportation. Well, all of these business owners that had lost their buildings wanted to rebuild. And they also had passed some laws that said you could only build brick and stone. You could no longer build with wood because they didn't want anything else to burn. So all these business owners were going to build their buildings, and they went to the city. The city's like, well, we're going to regrade the streets. And the business owners were like, well, how long is this going to take? And they said 10 years. So the business owners just built their buildings anyway. So you have just a normal looking downtown. Well, when the city came to regrade the streets, it's funny because every tour we went on, they were talking about how basically the government of Seattle from day one has been very much, we don't care and we're not doing it. Like their attitude towards just about everything is we don't care and we're not doing it. So all of these buildings were sitting on the streets. They came in to regrade the streets, and what they ended up doing was they built these 10-foot walls down the street and then capped it and made a street in the middle of the street at a different grade. But they didn't build sidewalks because the city said that the sidewalks were the responsibility of the business owners. So for like 10 years or more, downtown Seattle, you had a street that ran down the street, and in order to get to the buildings, you had to crawl down a ladder 10 feet in order to get to the front door of like the bank or, you know, whatever. And they didn't have guardrails either, so a lot of people fell off that and died. And it was not a good thing. But the city said that the sidewalks were the responsibility of the buildings. At some point, they compromised, and they went ahead and built sidewalks off the raised streets. So the city's new ground floor was the second level of all of these buildings. And if you want, you know, so if you were inside the building, you could go downstairs. But if you go outside, you're walking into this basically dark, former, you know, capped
off.
Yeah, it's like a catacomb. And for the longest time, they were abandoned. Well, they were used for a while, but it was really dark, and people would get lost in there, and they would get hurt. And there was a lot of illegal stuff going on in there, gambling and prostitution, and a lot of speakeasies, and just a lot of nasty stuff going on down there in the underground. And it's so they closed it. They closed it off to the public, and it stayed closed till the 1960s when somebody opened up the tour. And so we went on that tour, and it is crazy because as you're walking through, you know, you're just like walking down this underground street, and there's all this debris, all this construction debris that's been there since the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
The fronts of buildings, and then they'll have a picture of the building as it was, and then you'll see like the front door of this building, you know, here. And then if you go upstairs, you walk into the building on the second floor, and it's just it. And but a lot of people died down there. It's really, it's purportedly haunted. It was really, really cool. And what's eerie too is they decided, because for a while they were going to just use that bottom level, so they installed these skylights into the streets, into the sidewalks. So as you're walking down a street in Seattle, you'll notice this kind of like cross metal grid of like stained glass, and it just looks like a decorative thing on the street, but when you're underground, it's a skylight,
right?
And it lights you up, and it lights up really well, and it's really cool until it gets dark, and then you can't see nothing. So lot of bad mojo under there, you know. And but no, it was really, really cool. And like I said, we just did the tourist thing. We went all over the place.
We went to the Pop Culture Museum too, which was pretty awesome.
You know, that was something that I had no idea what I was in for when we went in there. But if you ever get a chance to go to the Seattle Pop Culture Museum, it is astounding.
It's pretty significant props that you sent me pictures of.
Yeah, they've got three. Let's see, what have they got? They've got a Jimi Hendrix exhibit, because Hendrix was from Seattle. They've got a Nirvana exhibit. And these are permanent exhibits. And they've got a movie exhibit. They've got fantasy, sci-fi, and horror in different rooms or different sections. And inside these different rooms, they have props from movies and scripts and stuff. So like in the fantasy section, you've got the first printed, first typed out draft of certain books. Like one was like the Sword of Shannara by Terry Brooks. You've got the costumes. I've got pictures of the costumes from Princess Bride. So Buttercup, Dread Pirate Roberts, and Inigo. There's swords are in there.
It'd be cool if they would have had Andre the Giant's costume next to it too, just for size reference.
Yeah,
that would have been cool.
They had the glove of the six fingered man in the fantasy. They had all of the swords from Lord of the Rings, like the real thing. They had the ring from Lord of the Rings. Then you move into the horror section, and it makes you want to cry. They had Freddy's hat, sweater, and glove from three different Nightmare on Elm Street movies. So I think the hat was from the first one, the sweater was from the second one, and the glove was from the fourth one.
Okay.
It's on a mannequin, so you've got three movies worth of props on a mannequin. They had Derek Mears' costume from the reboot of Friday the 13th. They had Michael Myers' costume from part 4. They had an original Gilman mask from
Creature of the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, Black Lagoon. They had Jack's axe from The Shining. They had the puppet of Gizmo from the Gremlins.
Oh, wow.
I remember whenever things were going wrong and he had the scared, like sad-looking face. Mm-hmm. That's the puppet. And let's see what else. They had the puppet of Church from Pet Sematary, the cat. The animatronic puppet. They had pages from the Necronomicon from Evil Dead 2.
They had the full-size Jeepers Creepers
They had the Jeepers Creepers. They had the bodysuit from Jeepers Creepers. They had the original alien bodysuit. They had... Oh, my God. What else did they have?
Pamela Voorhees.
They had Pamela Voorhees' heads from both the reboot and from the original 80s movie. From part one.
It looked like an amazing place to go.
I was just walking through there, just like I said, it's so awesome, makes you want to cry.
And Mork's costume from Mork and Mindy.
Then you move into sci-fi. They have the exoskeleton from Terminator, the first Terminator.
Okay.
Well, they had the exoskeleton from Terminator 2. They had his jacket from Terminator 1 and his glasses. They had the hand and the chip from part 2. They had Mork's costume from Mork and Mindy. They had some Star Trek stuff in there. They had an original Jawa. They had Greedo's mask and hands.
Oh, wow.
From Star Wars. They had models from Episode 1, from, like, the village on Tatooine.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some spaceship models from the different Star Wars movies. They had the original 2001 Space Odyssey, that big, long one with the ball on the end.
Yeah, yeah.
They had that. This is all the real thing. It tells, you know, and it's from private collections, you know, on exhibit there. I sent you a bunch of pictures home, and it was just like every time I turn a corner, it was something else. Jimi Hendrix, they had three or four of his guitars. They had his costumes, like the one he was wearing at Woodstock, you know, the big flowy stuff. Mm-hmm. Handwritten lyrics, letters that he'd written, half-finished poems, like napkins with song lyrics and coffee stains on it. It's his suitcases. Like, moving to the Nirvana exhibit, they had his striped sweater that he was wearing in the Smells Like Teen Spirit. Mm-hmm. Many, many, many of his smashed guitars. Lots and lots of his, like, again, lots of lyrics. That mannequin with the wings from In Utero.
Yeah.
That was in there. Because he made that. That was one of his sculptures that they used for that. Just so much stuff from Nirvana. They had drum kits and stuff. And then they had a traveling Marvel universe. They had Marvel. And it was... let's just say they had every costume from all of the Avengers. So, Captain America, Black Panther, you know, Spider-Man, all of them. They had all of their costumes. They had original artwork.
You said, yeah, I saw the one that the Wolverine.
I'll show you some more when we're done here. They have like, yeah, so like when Romita drew the Punisher for the first time, he hadn't named him yet. He was called like the Grim Reaper with a question mark or something. He hadn't even named the character yet, but he looks like the Punisher, but he's not named yet. The first appearance, like hand-drawn pages, first appearance of Loki, first appearance, you know, like just, we're not talking the books, we're talking the actual art,
the original art
that you know, Ditko and these guys all drew, and it's like the Wolverine, that number one Wolverine by Frank Miller, to look at it, like it's drawn and it's inked, you know, in black and white, and then there's some shadowing where you can see like the marker ran a little bit, so it's lighter in some areas and darker in others because they were just quickly sketching it out for effect. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. The history behind all of them.
The pieces of history that they are.
All of the props from the movies. They had the Blade costume.
Wow.
And his sword. Just so much stuff. So if you're a Marvel fan, it's...
Was that a traveling exhibit, though, or is that...
Yeah, that's a temporary exhibit. Because I'm sure they want those costumes back at some point.
Oh, yeah.
They even had the Captain America costume from the 70s TV show. So...
Oh, wow.
They had, like, animation cells from the Spider-Man cartoon from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, lots of really cool stuff in there. And I'll show you the pictures here in a second.
Okay, this what you sent me would look awesome, dude. And definitely a place I'd want to go visit.
Like I said, I'm walking through there just like with heart bubbles just popping out of my head. It was awesome. And then, then we spent a day running around Mount Rainier. And like I said, in Seattle, the weather, the temperature was cold. You know, we were 50s, 60s the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But we took... rented a car and went out to Mount Rainier, and so basically, you know, it's a mountain with a bunch of foothills, so we were cruising around the foothills, and as you're going higher and higher, the air gets thinner, you have to pop your ears, and it gets colder, and there's a certain latitude that you cross, a certain altitude, and you know because you're seeing snow on the mountains off in the distance, and then slowly you start seeing snow closer and closer, and then you see snow on the trees, And then you round a bend and you see snow on the ground. Like giant snow drifts. We get out and we made a snowman. We're like, this is awesome. And you make your way up to this place. It's called Paradise. And it's just this little, it's not even a town. It's just kind of this little outpost on the mountain. And it's got a little gift shop and a restaurant and all this stuff. But we're talking at least 3 or 4 feet deep of snow. Like the most snow that I've ever seen, especially right. in June. And it never melts. And it's fresh, crisp, and clean. It's not gray and slushy. It's right. And we were making snowballs and snow angels and playing in the snow in June up in this mountain. It was awesome. So cool.
That was like a great trip, man.
So if you ever get a chance, like I said, we were just full-on tourists, but it was worth it. It was great. And a lot of this stuff we booked before we even left. We were just like, oh, that sounds good. Let's go ahead and buy the city pass or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it's a great place. Now, to be fair, they've got a really big homeless problem up there. It's as bad as it sounds, it's kind of like Walking Dead. They're everywhere. And so you got to kind of watch your step. You got to watch where you're going.
Is it panhandling aggressive, or is it?
It's not that it's aggressive, but it's everywhere.
Okay.
So, and they know if you've got money, even if you've got a dime, they know. Because, you know, they're not really that bad. And most of them are stoned. So, like, weed's legal in Washington. So, everywhere you go, it just smells like pot. But yeah, it's pretty bad. I can imagine when it gets cold. Not good. But, yeah, you know, that's just kind of a little recap of the vacation. But, I mean, snow in June, that was something I never thought I'd see. And then I was kind of like, well, the fucked up thing, dude, we drove around all day. Like, we were on the road all day. We got up to Paradise, and that was like the apex of stuff. And then there's like this little thing inside that's like this model of the mountain. And it's a, you know, it's like, you see the mountain, you see the snow and all this stuff on this model, and you're looking, because it's got all these different trails marked and stuff. And it's like, push for you are here. You push the button, it's like bing. So you're still like 40 miles from the mountain.
Top, yeah.
So, but I was happy with where we were. Cool. I didn't need to put didn't need to get any axes and sickles and stuff.
Go too far off the beaten path where you might get in trouble.
Yeah. don't anger any park rangers. That is another thing. And I know we have some sort of similar. We have arcades in which they serve alcohol, but they're not bars that are open all the time. There's a bar there that is a full-on pinball and old-school arcade with like Street Fighter and Space Invaders in new. I don't know if it's new old stock or just repros, but yeah, you know, it's a full-on bar. You order your drink, you get a handful of quarters, and you go play Street Fighter. And we spent a lot of time in there. It was fun. But yeah, if you ever get a chance to go up to Seattle, it's worth it.
Okay.
A lot of fun. I don't know, Seinfeld. You got anything else?
I'm tapped out pretty much. My second episode, my brain is just kind of shutting down at this point.
It does that. Yeah, mine's about fried. Spending the whole day sitting there working on my computer.
Past 2 days have been QuickBooks nonstop, and this all I've been doing is bookkeeping stuff, and it just kind of it wears you down, dude.
I found it's difficult to watch horror movies when you actually have to pay attention to what you're working. Like, if you want to put on something in like Forrest Gump or something, you just let it ride. But when you have to like watch,
you gotta pay attention
to get the suspense, it's kind of hard. Not gonna not do it, but anyway, like I said, we are coasting into booked for a Halloween show. So if you want to get on. I'm gonna have to increase the price pretty soon because we're We're just at that point where you're going to have to get a table whether you want it or not.
Okay.
So if you haven't already, go ahead and hit me up and book your table. If you're on the fence, do it now. This is not the hard sales pitch. This is just straight up
reality.
I've got only so many places to spaces to sell. So that is all, and there ain't no more. So keep it scary.
Later.